Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
Alexei Navalny's death should be described as murder, according to a Foreign Office minister. Leo Doherty agreed with the term when responding to comments from the chair of the Foreign Affairs Select Committee, Alicia Cairns.
Alexei Navalny was murdered, and it is important that we in this House call it out for what it was, because that is what he deserves. Following his murder, I was also in Munich, where I heard his wife, Julia, ask for us to stand by her.
Julian Assange is set to make his final bid for a domestic appeal against a judge's ruling over his extradition to the United States. The WikiLeaks founder is wanted in the US over an alleged conspiracy to obtain and disclose national defense information. New research suggests HS2 will drive a £10 billion economic boost for the West Midlands over the next decade. And former Strictly Come Dancing professional Robin Windsor has died at the age of 44. From Radio News Hub, I'm Edward Breslin.
Like some kind of pizza ninja, Domino's are slicing their prices. Domino's Price Slice. Small pizzas now £8, medium now £10, and large now £12. Yep, we're making cuts too. And 7th of April 24, minimum delivery spend, charges and areas may apply. T's and C's, see domino's.co.uk.
Coming up, Africa in Focus.
If you live in social housing and an issue such as damp and mould, leaks or a broken front door lock is giving you sleepless nights, know how to get your complaint heard. Because if you've complained through your landlord's complaints process and you're not happy with the final response, you can escalate your complaint to the Housing Ombudsman. They're impartial and will investigate fairly, and can order your landlord to take action. Everyone deserves a safe and secure home. Know your rights. Visit gov.uk/social housing.
Hello, I'm Dr. Sheon Bakare. If something in your body doesn't feel right, talk to us. Don't let the worry of cancer play on your mind. Tests could put your mind at rest. Until you find out, you can't rule it out. Your NHS wants to see you. Contact your GP practice.
Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
Africa in Focus.
Colorful
Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, or even good evening, depending on the time zone that you're connected to us from. Welcome to Africa in Focus, and I'm your host, Julius Mbaluto. Another wonderful time to focus on the continent of Africa, and we're coming to you from the heart of London on Colorful Radio to wherever you are. So join us as we focus on the continent once again. And today I'm joined by a great friend of mine, Samuel Chege. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. No, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah.
My name is Samuel Chege, and I am a broadcast journalist. And as you've mentioned, I also venture in other places in business. And it's great for you having invited me. To your show.
It's always a pleasure. It's always a pleasure. Listeners, it's great to have this wonderful moment. Our big issue today, focusing on Africa, our very big issue, we want to check on consistency in leadership. You see, let me introduce this to ourselves. Many times when you listen to speeches by African presidents, when you listen very carefully, some of them are very passionate. They're full of fire. And, you know, when you listen to them, you even get inspired. And you're like, now we are going somewhere in Africa. But then the problem is, along the way, I don't know what happens. I don't know who they meet on the road on their way home. They start to sound like broken record player.
Do you know what it is? For me, I find it very interesting, and I think it's such a shame, because one of the things I consider as the reason why is that most people come into power not having been prepared for power. It's like, for example, when you meet an 18-year-old who just now became legal to be able to drink or to be able to go to a club, they tend to overdo it because they've never had such freedom. And I guess if you compare it to the leaders, some of the leaders, this is the first time leading. And so they get carried away, as you can imagine, with leadership. And they forget the promises that they made because they're so excited about having power. But you know, the first time people are listening to them, it's the first time that their decision actually makes makes a difference.
And that's so very true. That's very
true. That sense of power.
Yeah.
If not channeled the right way, this is the reason. In my view, that we end up with the situation. The other reason, I think, is that we never have succession planning. So the previous leader has not prepared anyone to ever take over should they have to move forward, or when the time comes for them to move forward. And so you end up with power-hungry individuals who only see as far as themselves. And that's a dangerous place to be. And this is where most of us African leaders tend to find ourselves.
Some leaders forget different moments of their life. Moment when they were not a leader and the moment they are a leader. I'll give you an example, of course, to our listeners. You see, a story is told about a man who was an activist, full of fire. So everybody, every protest that was to happen, he was on the forefront. He was known. He was a leading light of any protest. He was the manifestation of serious protest. When he's not in the protest, people will be like, "Today there's no protest because they haven't seen him."
It's not a proper protest until when he's there.
And this guy, this man, ends up one day because he was popular with the people. They fought him to be the president. And then when he was in power as a president, he saw people on the street protesting against his government. And then he went to join them to protest. He went to join them to protest. He said, "What are you doing here, sir? We are protesting against you. Do you mind? You shouldn't be on our side, you know?"
Yeah.
Because he forgot the times.
Yeah.
He used to protest, but some of the things he has not done them, he promised to do them, he did not deliver. So
yeah,
we have a challenge in terms of Africa leaders, because when they speak, they are full of passion, you know, and along the way they change. But what makes them change? These are things we are going to explore. But to just try to catch up with an example of what we are talking about, we just wanted to focus on Kenya's president, William Ruto, and definitely when he got into power, he has made amazing speeches across Africa, about Africa, that have really, really attracted attention of a lot of Africans. And them seeing him now, like, wow, we have a liberator as Africa. So let's just walk along with that for now. Let's listen up.
Passion, our collective consciousness, willpower, solidarity and unity to fulfill our fundamental generational mandate of introducing Africa as a new global power, ready and able to provide leadership towards a new industrial age that shall simultaneously usher in an era of inclusive development, shared prosperity, and effective climate action. We must therefore capitalize on the institutional reform momentum at the African Union to pursue the complete development of effective capacity to deliver pan-African transformation. To do this, self-reliance, ladies and gentlemen, is essential. And a fit-for-purpose institutional architecture is indispensable at the AU. At the moment, over 60% of our program's budget is financed by partners. The demands of our challenging time require an AU that can pursue multiple urgent and critical interventions using internally mobilized resources. The Pan-African movement has always been about sovereignty and agency. First and foremost, chronic dependence, even on well-meaning partners, is starkly inconsistent with the aspiration of independence, sovereignty, and agency. And I therefore believe that we must take seriously the recommendations that have been made towards making our organization an organization that stands on its feet and an organization that is funded by us.
Wow. if that was just to be implemented, our problems as Africans would go away.
Yeah, of course. They're gone. Like that.
Yeah.
Kaboom, they're gone.
Because definitely chronic dependency of African continent on the West, that has been really the thing that has bedeviled the continent. See, most of the time, if I just want to look back and the history of Africa and institutions like IMF and the World Bank, every other leader, I remember one time in interviewing one of former president along the way before when he was campaigning, what are you going to do different this time for your country? And his first words were, we'll be looking up to the international community. And I'm like, at that point, I was actually angered by that. And I said, excuse me, sir, how about looking inward to your country people? How about looking inward to the resources that you have as a country? How about inspiring your own people to be innovative, to make a difference, to change the destiny of your country? Why are you looking up to international community for? So that has been the issue from a lot of leaders. They jump up into power. Next thing, looking up to international community. Any little problem, international community, come and help us.
The challenge I see there is we don't know what we have and we don't know the value of what we have. For example, you look at things like coffee. Coffee is one of the most consumed beverage in the West. We've had coffee as long as I've known Kenya, and we don't actually process coffee. We sell the raw material rather than finding a way of adding value to coffee. And then we wonder why our people have no employment if there's no opportunity that created for them to be able to do that, you know? And it seems like every time I kind of look forward to some of our leaders, I think, okay, we've got a new leader now. Okay, hoping that it's going to be a different experience. And for some reason, it just becomes another disappointment. And it's similar to when I go to supermarket and buy mangoes. From the time I came here, you go to the supermarket and you see a good-looking mango. And it reminds you of back home when you used to pick a mango from the tree and enjoy the taste of it. And every time I've gone to the supermarket and I've bought these beautiful mangoes, when I bring it home, it tends to be rotten inside. And I can't find any other example to use other than that. It's like you kind of think, you're looking and seeing, okay, surely this person has been in a position where, okay, we need to make a difference. You know, he talks the talk and he talks the great passion, like you said. But then when it comes to delivering it, you find that there's nothing being delivered other than what was there before. And it becomes a real challenge because, at what point are we going to realize what we are worth? because everyone else outside, they wouldn't give you, you know, the bank doesn't give you money for nothing if they know that you're not able to pay back. So there must be a reason why they're able to give the money to support the leaders. But we don't see the value that the banks see in us. And as African leaders, and I think that's where we need to kind of look in, or they need to be looking in and seeing what do we have in us that people, these outsiders are happy to pay.
This is Colorful Radio.
Colorful Radio.
Colorful.
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 Genius.
Colorful. Colorful. Colorful Radio.
Yeah, it's ironical, isn't it?
Yeah.
The world producer of cocoa is in Ghana and is in Africa, but the world producer of chocolate is in Europe.
There you go.
Then, world producer of oil, big names like Nigeria.
Yeah.
But they don't process it. It's they sell to the world crude, it's processed and is sold back to them at a higher cost, to the level that now they complain they cannot afford the price of fuel. It's ironical. Yeah. Seriously, it's ironical. Yeah, as you have put it, like, I want to say, last Africa summit, UK-Africa summit, that was before COVID, because I think that was the last one. After COVID, I haven't seen another one. I hope they'll remember that COVID left. But the last one, Boris Johnson, former Prime Minister of the UK, he kept bragging, talking about 3/4 of the tea drunk in the UK is from Kenya. And he kept on going on with that word, going on that word. And shall I surprise you? I had an interaction way back a long time ago with a minister from an African country. He had come to the UK because he had been appointed to head the agriculture in their country, but he came to UK to visit Yorkshire tea plantations.
Did you tell him to go up to visit the flower market too?
I'm like, he comes from Kenya.
Wow.
But it's all rebranded. You even have Sainsbury tea.
Yep.
Sometimes they can't shy away. They say, oh, Kenyan Sainsbury. Whatever you want to call it.
You know, of course.
But where is it coming from? But our people are so misguided. We have those low opinions, especially leaders. They have low opinions of the potential within their country. And I think one of the things that we need to address is the lack of focus and our leaders' ability to know the power we have. For example, why do I say so? Because if you knew how much your country means to the world, will you sell it short? Will you look or take it for granted? Because you know you have diamonds, you know you have gold. Will you just tell anyone, oh, come for cheap? So there are issues. Who come to that? Kenya is a bit guilty of that, because not long ago I had the world being told, you know, Kenya is a mother country, come for visa free. Anyone in the world?
Yeah.
Terrorists, thieves, crooks, anyone. Because when you say anyone can come, you didn't actually put in caveat. It's blanket cover to everybody. Just come. But
we find out,
that was too good to be true. When analysis were done, and now everyone who was told come to Kenya is visa free, the new mechanism, they're like, we prefer the old one. This is a new visa which is more expensive than the previous one. So So again, holding up to inconsistency in the way our leaders speak. So our leaders in Africa, they need to have their game. Consistency, that's what we mean. When you have conviction for something, be consistent. Because that's who you are.
Of course.
That's why, I mean, what do you think about Magufuli, for example? John Pombe Magufuli, former president of Tanzania?
No, I mean, the one thing that you don't hear from Tanzania is what we hear in Kenya. You know, Tanzania, they look after their own. You know, you don't hear them in a public forum, you know, constantly looking for the West. They have found a way of resourcing what they have and making them meaningful. You look at a country like India. When I first came here in the 90s, there were appeals for, you know, to help the Indian community. But they went in, worked on the inside, and then now they have the power to compete with those who are helping them. Same thing, you look at China. China was in the same position back in the 90s, but they looked from the inside, looked at what they had, you know, refined it, and then sold it to the rest of the world. You know, and that's what makes them powerful. And you look at Kenya, everything we have, we just sell off because it's easier to just sell it off. For example, you look at the last few years, we've had an influx of nurses coming from Kenya, but yet the ministers in Kenya will send their family relatives to another countries when they're unwell. But yet we are sending our nurses, our doctors away because we're not willing to pay them enough to stay. You know, and it's like, you look at this country has been able to do what they do is because they prioritize what's important for the people, for any outsider.
You see, in a very small way, small scale way, when you want to get a child or someone to do something in this space, a child, you say, oh, I'm going to buy for you a sweet. It's as simple as that. And that child will do whatever you want because they like sweets, they like biscuits. No, who doesn't? Yeah. Then that is a moment now when it goes to a little higher scale, especially in an African context. You hear amazing terminologies.
Yeah.
I'll never forget when I was covering the Chicken Gate scandal involved Kenya's electoral body giving taking bribes from a UK-based printing firm to procure tender to print electoral material. But that body, I think it was... It wasn't just working in Kenya. It was getting tenders across different other countries in Africa. So in Kenya, for example, cut a long story short, it was known Chicken Gate. Why? Because within that electoral body, there was that point man who was in charge of making sure the bribe gets to their hands. But how did they do it? All they had to do was to speak with the printing firm and how much will it cost. For example, if you're going to photo registration card, it's going to cost you £2. These guys will come and tell you, sell it to us £5. But remember, £3 is not yours. Get your £2, but the £3 difference, cumulatively, that's what you sent to us as commission. And exactly that's what happened. And by the way, as I'm speaking to you, the owner of that printing farm, he was sentenced, prosecuted in the UK courts, and was sentenced with his own son, Smith and Holtzman. That was the farm. He was sentenced. I'm free to comment this because it's a case concluded. But when you look at this guy with his father, they own the farm that was giving bribes in Africa. You see how amazing justice system in the UK can be and deliver, because this is someone prosecuted in their countries for giving bribes abroad. But But the receivers of the bribe,
yeah,
nothing ever happened to them.
Of course. And that's
the, always that's walking scot-free. So this, they were calling this chicken, because this guy in Nairobi, he was busy making emails, sending emails. I said, you have to hurry up now. My men are on the table waiting for the chicken. I'll never forget how hilarious sometimes it will be in court, because the judge will be like, prosecutor will be like, tell us your email, 1 p.m. chicken on the table, men are waiting. Did you mean a real chicken to come from London? Nairobi table? Did you mean bribe? Or say, no, it was not a bribe. I didn't mean then say, yeah, okay, it was a bribe. You know, when you listen to these things, when you watch them now, chicken in Kenya, that's why the scandal was called Chicken Gate. But when you go to West African countries, where they were also giving bribes, the name changes. They were calling it grease. So they'll tell you, you have to grease our hands so we work faster. We move quicker. Grease our hands. And when you look at all this language of corruption, at the highest scale, let me ask you a question, and this is very serious. This is electoral body taking bribes. This is a printing firm from a powerful country giving bribes. The already election is compromised.
Yes, of course.
It's totally compromised. So these are the things that are happening in our countries in Africa, and it's really, really sad. But we're talking about consistency of leadership, consistent leaders, people who have conviction, because when you stand on something, you believe on it, you can die for it.
Yeah.
And this is the thing, like a very good example we can always illustrate when you look into life of someone like Dr. Martin Luther King. Look at this guy, he was standing in his conviction to the very, very end. I always remember his last speech and premonition. He knew he was definitely gonna be killed, and he, because he was consistent, he could tell every moment of his life what's gonna happen. If you listen very carefully to the last speech of Dr. Martin Luther King, when he's saying that, like you all, I will love longevity, but that's none of my concern now. He ends up to tell us, I have gone on the mountaintop. God has shown me the Canaan land. We as a community will get there. But even if I don't get there with you, you will be there. You know, when you listen to this guy, you see, he started from the ground. He built up.
Of course.
And that's up there, crescendo, just up there. This guy has been consistent to the last minute of his life. This is what we're talking about.
Of course. And
not to excite us as African and then you throw us away out of the window.
And what was interesting, that in the beginning of all this, there was a talk about ending corruption, that anyone taking bribes within the governmental position will be punished. And the bribes are still going on, and the people are still taking bribes. And it's like, at what point make an example and say, will you actually stand, you know?
Maybe, as you rightly said, the look of corruption is confusing. They don't know which is which. They're like, could it be this one? Maybe not. This looks like normal.
And it's so ingrained in people's system and in the country's systematic way of doing things that it's hard to see Kenya without, or East Africa without corruption, or Africa without corruption. And are we suggesting that there's no corruption in the rest of the world? Of course not.
Yeah.
We just don't see it as prevalent.
It's got many different faces.
Colorful, 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 colorful radio.
Before many countries in Africa became independent, we had a generation of leaders who stood for something and they could actually die for it.
Yeah.
And therefore they had to pursue the fighting for freedom to free their countries.
Yeah.
But it looks like since that time, after independence of many countries, leaders who come, they just see politics as a means to an end. It's not driven by conviction. It's not driven by ideology. It's not driven by what they believe, the values they have for humanity. Most of them are like, it's an opportunity to make money.
I think,
and political parties in many countries in Africa are not even founded on political conviction more than just a vehicle to get to power.
Yes, and I think using my first analogy about becoming an adult, for example, in the Kikuyu culture, you had, you know, for a boy to become a man, he must go through circumcision. So that was his rite of passage to becoming a man. But there isn't such a thing in becoming a leader. You as long as you've got the right money and you've got the right people, as long as you've got enough people backing you, you can wake up today and say, tomorrow I'm going to be a president.
It's all about money.
And so there's no anything to do, there's nothing to do with the rite of passage.
Yeah.
There's no, for example, each party leader has an assistant who can step in. For example, when Boris Johnson stepped in, he wasn't the elected one, but he was trained to be able to take over. Should he have to? You know, you look at the Labour Party, they have the equivalents. But we don't have that. It's like, once you've got a leader, that's it.
So the most hilarious moments in African politics is when you see during campaigns, people clearly had a stand, had something they believed in, they fought for it, they popularized it, they sold those things to citizens, and they were voted on those bases. But after getting into power, being voted when they're in parliament, you see them abandoning that camp and joining the opposition, the people they were criticizing.
Yes.
So party hopping, just like as if there's no values, nothing, emptiness. No. It's pretty sad. I mean, we have seen that in Kenya. Many MPs, after they were elected on opposition tickets, they come and they join the government, the ruling party. And it, to them, it's just like a small thing, but it's all money exchanging hands. Anyways,
of course,
we want to again look at this President Ruto as an example of being the darling of Africa. Let's hear what he's going to say again.
We have made the decision that it is not intelligent for 54 of us to go and sit before one gentleman from another place. I mean, and sometimes we are mistreated.
Yeah.
You know, we are loaded into buses like school cheats. You know, and it's not right.
Well, you are summoned. You know,
it's not right. So the decision that we have made as AU is that going forward, if there is going to be a discussion between Africa and any other country, we are going to be represented by the chair, the outgoing chair, the bureau. And the chair of the RECs, and we have five RECs. That should be sufficient.
Okay.
A meeting of maybe six, seven.
Yeah.
That should be able to represent Africa, and that is the position I am taking as the president of Kenya.
I've always wondered. 54 presidents. There's Russia Africa Summit, they are there. UK Africa Summit, they are there. China Africa Summit, they are there. All of them. And they go as presidents.
Yeah.
Number one, if you look into the how power works, it's not the president that does the job.
No.
If it was a meeting about economy, this should be a meeting for economists of these countries, not presidents.
Yes.
And some of them, they sleep through their speeches. They go back to Africa. And you know, the ironical thing about it, what we are talking about now, Ruto, that's him. Yeah. But this week, do we not see him going to the Italian Africa summit? Italy now is a new kid in the block of superpowers. Italy benefited seeing these guys again there, all of them again. Yeah. And I just want to focus on that before we start to talk about it. It's also another thing, promises. He came across like the most well-informed, the man with solutions. And let me tell you something, the most harmful form of support that Africa has ever received was World Bank and IMF. If you remember early 90s, structural and adjustment programs that hurt the economies of Africa. If you remember the loans with preconditions attached, IMF, World Bank dictating how you should even conduct your politics, what you are supposed to do, and all of that. What kind of power is that? And you see, thank God, I thought some of leaders today in Africa would have known Africa stopped going west, Africa started going east because they discovered China. China is not bothered. They're like, we have a deal. We give you money, pay us back. Roads, we do them. We are not involved in your democracy. You know what I mean? But it was like an era of free relief for African countries because of the disrespect these institutions were all the time showing African continent. But why am I bringing this on? Because not long ago, when Ruto came into power, the first institutions he was to bash, it was the IMF and it was the World Bank. He advocated for a new setup of transformation of international financial systems. That was his advocacy. Also, the power of the dollar controlling other world economies, he was advocating for African currency. Again, music to the ears of Africans. Yeah. Before we start to comment, let me share another clip and then you can move on from there, because now it'll illustrate where we are with Ruto, President Ruto.
Yeah.
I don't know if President William Ruto means it, because he said so many things and I can't locate him these days, because the things he said during election and the things he's doing now are two different things. I don't know. Because I heard him saying we need to do away with the dollar and build our own currency. But his actions are not speaking to anything of doing away with the dollar. We call upon the Kenyan government to be firm and to decide what they want to be. Do they want to be Pan-Africanist, or do they want to be proponents of neocolonialism? You can't have it both. Only one call must be made, and that call is of Pan-Africanism.
Well.
Wow. I haven't got much hair on my head, but that really causes my hair to stand up. Other than the umbrellas that you mentioned earlier in the beginning.
More than one umbrella.
that clip actually made my hair stand up, even though I've got no hair.
It's not easy.
No,
but you see, before we say that, maybe probably to capture the context, because when Julius Malema was speaking, he was in Kenya, and there's a Lukenya University. They launched for the very first time, pretty much unprecedented, what we call a Pan-Africanist institution within the university. That has never been there before. And therefore, when you hear him talk about Pan-Africanism, this is where he's coming from. and he's just trying to analyze what's going on with this guy.
Yeah. Wow. Where do we even start from there? I mean,
colorful radio. Colorful radio.
And this goes back to the very original point I made. We don't know what we have, and we don't know the value of what we have. And if we were to look at what the outsiders are saying, someone like Julius, about the Mau Mau, for a start. I mean, this country has, you know, a day to remember those who died in the war. You know, those who died for the sake of their country, they're remembered, and they're represented well. The Mau Mau were never represented until recent. And I don't know. He mentioned something about the neo-colonialist.
Yeah.
And it's clear that we as Kenya are not deciding which one we want to be. Do we want to be?
But it's not Kenya. It's not. Yeah. He said the right words. They believed. Mm. But he's trying to search him, like browsing, and saying, I can't find you now.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't feel you now. I used to feel you, but...
I can never quite understand why we don't look at what we have and value what we have. And I think it goes down to the colonialist mentality. And I don't know when that's going to end. Because Julius practically took out the words that I've been saying for many years about the colonialist mindset, that the West is always better, the other is always better. So if I brought you some raisins from Kenya and I brought you from Britain or from other parts of the world, the British one is going to be better, or it's going to be considered better. But until when we can value what we have, and our leaders be able to value what we have, we can't see progress. And it benefits the outsiders that we are ignorant of what we have, of the value that we have. Because then they make, they, you know, like you said, they buy it from us for cheap and sell it to us twice the price. Of course, from a business point of view, it makes sense. But at what point are we going to see, or is the leaders going to see, the value of their own countries?
I think most importantly is the conviction that is missing in the equation. Because if he was to stuck to what he's been saying, of course he would be called out, because he's consistent. But look at the things that are happening. One moment you are condemning the IMF and the World Bank. You are rightfully saying how evil they are. Another minute, we see you playing with them giving you so much money, you're giving you so big debt, creating huge debt for your country, Kenya, the same institution you are criticizing. Another example, you see, for example, talking about this US dollar, there was no one, I mean, if you go back, no one has ever been so vocal in condemnation of the dollar. Yeah, I remember when even Kenya started to buy oil with Kenya shillings. That has never happened. But of course, as scandals exposed and we find out what was going on, we realize it was all strange games being played, because now Kenya has to use a dollar to buy oil again. See, the thing is inconsistency, lack of conviction, telling us something. You come across as liberator for Africa, but next moment, you are dining and whining with those whom you condemn. Yep. So who is being fooled here? So this is a thing that Julius Malema is saying.
How we move from there? Because what leader do we, you know, what new leaders do we have that would yeah. that are equipped to do better, exactly. you know. And at what point do we actually realize actually this is not working?
Yeah.
And inconsistency is something that we've seen with many leaders, not just in Kenya, but across most of the countries in Africa.
Around but the I wonder, world as well, though. Around the world as well, to be fair.
Of course, yes. But we are all focusing on East Africa here.
Yeah, Africa.
So, so that's my challenge, and this is what it's gonna take for us to have a leader who is consistent.
Wait, and that is my challenge with our problem, especially African. When you talk about succession, you're like, who is to succeed who?
Yes.
And who is to mentor who?
Now, who do we vote for? Other than
that's another challenge, because now elections now, and as we are approaching to end this, the challenge we have in African politics is a question of, again, our 14 institution, our systems, because you can campaign as a good politician with good intent.
Yeah. And
yes, you convince people who can vote for you. When they vote for you, the system rigs you out.
Yeah.
Then you go back and you hear someone saying, Africans, you get the leaders you choose. They don't get the leaders they choose. If this criminal stole elections, my vote did not count.
Yeah.
Why should I be blamed now to be told, as a country, get leaders that you choose? We did not choose this criminal. He stole elections.
No.
You know what I mean? So from Nigeria, you saw the example, like, oh, the machines did not start working, but that does not stop voter tallying. So where did the votes go through? If the machines did not work, you know what I mean? When you look at the announcement of the presidential candidate in Kenya, total abuse of the constitution, because if, for example, the commission could not conduct election for the country when one commissioner was missing, the law would tell you the commission was not properly instituted, legally instituted, because one commission is missing. But you have to tell us when four commissioners' opinion is against two or three.
Yeah.
You want to tell us it doesn't matter. Four commissioners are disagreeing with you as a chairman of the commission. They don't want to be involved with what you are going to announce. But you want to tell us it's okay for you to announce. So I want to say, Africans should not be blamed. Citizens should not be blamed, being told they get leaders they choose.
Because you don't get
it depends on whether the fairness of the election depends on the independence, the accuracy. It depends on many things. So it's not easy to lump us up, tell us, oh, you got the leaders you elected. Who elects who?
Yeah. And what options do we have?
Exactly. So, but we don't want to be despair.
I guess that there ought to be some kind of a program about, you know, the future leaders. What do they look like? How do we get the future leaders?
I wish that's a very good conversation. We want to find out the potential for future leaders in Africa.
Or are they going to be TikTokers?
Well, maybe that may work. So sometimes just think about it. Because you see, within the TikTok, it's all about power of social media. Yeah. And sometimes the constitution is thrown out of the way. It's not a question of who is more popular than the other. Could we just reduce election to as simple as that?
Yes.
And we fought through TikTok.
Yes.
Maybe it could be a solution. Anyway, to our listeners, don't go away. Stay tuned for more programs coming to you from Colorful Radio. Keep it colorful. Samuel is always down in the
This is girl, I want you to stay so we can play this little game we play. When you go high and I will see, let me be the one to make you weep.
Hold on, let me say.
Too good, hit me back. I've been making some plans for you, babe. What I wanna do, just can't wait. Yeah. Let me know when you wanna wait.
Boy, I'm sorry that I missed your call. I'm on my way when I get home.
Okay.
What you want, I'm trying to see. Yeah. I think I want the same thing.
One knee and propose to it, yeah.
It's the bad girls club.
we fine. Too fine.
Like he's not.